Good morning. Welcome, everyone. Some of you may know that we just finished Silent Illumination Retreat this morning. And even for those of you who weren't here for the retreat, you may find what I'm about to share, hopefully a little useful. Some of you who had been practicing may be wondering how we can take the practice that we've been engaging in, the practice of cultivating moment-to-moment clear awareness of body-mind in this space. Here, a lot of time on the sitting meditation seat, how do we take that into our daily life? After all, we go home, we got responsibilities at home in the family, at work, and of course, various ways of engaging in a social relationship or other ways we engage in civic life as citizens, members of our community. And this is when we will find guidance from what we recite often, the four great bodhisattva vows, helpful. Many of you may remember reciting it various times, various situations. In fact, I myself recite it every time before I start my sitting meditation practice, and you might want to try integrating it into your own practice. And I also recite it at the end of my meals so that I won't forget. And some of you may remember reciting it here at the monastery, the four great bodhisattva vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha way is unattainable. I vow to attain it. And you may vaguely remember reciting this. Possibly you think that, well, this doesn't really apply to me, surely. It seems very highfalutin or really advanced. This may be for the priest here to do. Me, maybe not. So maybe you're just kind of saying it without really paying much attention to it. In fact, remembering these four great bodhisattva vows will be incredibly important for us to remember, to remind us of the path so that we do not stray off in some strange directions. I just read you the translation used here at the monastery. I've been reciting on my own a slightly different translation, and that's what I'll be using. And that translation is a literal translation of the four lines written in Chinese. And so you might notice some slight difference. The general idea, same. Right? The first vow, most important. And here in the liturgy book here, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them. The character save, that's being translated as save, in the version that I recite myself, is we recited as, I vow to deliver innumerable sentient beings. Save, deliver, what is that? Well, like the word like deliver, literal, it was a literal translation from the character that intends to say, like, we want to bring sentient beings from the shore of suffering to the other shore. Right? Now you'll be like, I don't know, that has anything to do with me because I'm suffering. I really can't help the other people go to the other shore, right? Well, actually, we can do it right now. What it is, like, what it really means is that we vow to bring benefits to sentient beings in what we do, right? How we live. Well, that is very manageable, right? We can do that. And this is very important to keep in mind because it reminds us what it is that we are here to do, the motivation, the right intention. We need to cultivate for our practice. Oftentimes, I encounter practitioners who come to the practice. For example, a few years ago, she's a therapist at a college. And she said, I want to come to practice, sort of endure 7 days of leg pains, so that she can better help the suffering beings she works with as a therapist at work. She can be more present with them and be able to support them. And also, I encounter people who find that they're struggling as parents. They feel like they can't really connect with their children, and they're not really doing a good job as a parent, not able to have a harmonious relationship with their family members, and they want to practice to be able to be a better parent. So these are really the motivation that is appropriate for bringing to the practice. I vow to deliver innumerable sentient beings. And here we are talking about, we're pointing to the fact that we are practicing. We are practicing in order to be able to bring benefits to sentient beings. Pointing to the fact that especially easy to kind of forget when we engage in a lot of meditation practice, right? We kind of, after a while, forget what it's about. And may kind of think that, oh, it's about to, this is about finding ways to gain meditative experience. After a while, you think, what am I doing here? It's like, I'm to try to achieve this one-mind state. I'm trying to achieve that blissful experience so that I can tell people when they say, hey, what are you doing? You're doing all the meditation in retreats. And what did you get? You want to have something to show for it. And so after a while, if we forget this vow, we may go off in those direction. And when we remember this vow, that I am engaging this practice so that I can bring benefit to sentient beings, so that we can remember it is not about gaining meditative experience. It's not about some form of collecting meditative experience, some form of spiritual materialism. This will help us stay on the path. And here, some of you may be discouraged, put off by the part about sentient beings are numberless or innumerable sentient beings. That feels very impossible. Maybe like a couple people, but like innumerable sentient beings. How is that manageable? How is it possible? Am I just saying things, making vows that there's no hope of fulfilling? Well, one way to understand innumerable sentient beings, and we can understand it as you're referring to everyone we encounter, everyone we have the opportunity to encounter, and also people who are affected by our actions, then it becomes more manageable for us to consider our action and think about how in this moment I can bring benefits to others. And first off, we start with people who are close to us, our loved ones, our family members, for example, our friends. So some of you may think, well, how to bring benefit to them? Like in our culture, we are encouraged to, how do you show that you care about them? How about go shopping and buy more gifts for them? Like, well, oftentimes that may not be what they need. And we already have what most people truly need and want, our full presence. This morning, in the sharing at the end of the retreat, one of the participants shared this very important insight, realizing that being fully present with someone really is a form of love. If you had been fortunate enough to be on the receiving end of it, you realize when someone is fully present with you, allow you to feel truly seen and heard. You feel loved by that person. And the reason why we notice it, because it's rare. Most people are so distracted, their minds so scattered. They often forget to be fully present with us. So this is one way we can bring benefit to other sentient beings. When this is the reason why we engage in the practice of cultivating moment-to-moment clear awareness. And in the practice of the silent illumination we've been engaging in, practice being fully present with ourselves. Allow our thoughts and feelings to be fully felt and seen and heard. We engage in this practice to be fully present with ourselves so that we know how to be fully present with others, allowing others to feel felt and heard and seen and thus loved. And sometimes when we try to put it into practice, we may notice some habits, our most common entrenched habits, is to take people in our life, especially our loved ones, for granted. This in our mind, they're just there, almost like a piece of furniture. It's like a couch, you know, like my husband, yeah, he's just there. As a result, because we have fallen into this habit of taking our loved ones for granted, they're always there for us. We allow ourselves to get in our mind that I'm too busy. I have all this stuff to do. You have this long to-do list to get to at home. And when our loved ones come home, we often forget to bother to notice, to pay attention, to be fully present with them. So for example, maybe a loved one has been out at school, at work for a day, and come home. If we spend time to be present with them, we may be able to notice, something is bothering him. Did something happen at work? And we're able to ask about it, and maybe you can't offer any solution for them, but they feel seen and felt and thus loved by us. Oftentimes, only take a minute, but in our mind, because we are so habituated to taking people in our life for granted, we tell ourselves, I'm too busy. And by the way, I already know who that is. It's just my husband. Ignore him. Not really seeing him. So this is what we can do in bringing benefit to people in our life. Actually, this reminds me of someone I spoke with recently, in the last couple months. She told me she's a homemaker, and her husband works at home a part of the week. And she said, well, we spend all this time in the same house, but we rarely talk to each other. Actually, when she travels to visit her mother in another country, that's when they talk a lot more. So this is kind of illustrating. We tend to get into the habits of just getting so busy with our stuff. And of course, nowadays, is sit there and then start looking at our phone instead of paying attention to our loved ones right here in front of us. Again, here I'm not talking about just like staring at the people at home and like, I'm paying you attention here. They kind of like, you're being weird. So I need to go get going doing my stuff. We're not talking about that, but like actually, yeah, pay attention and spend time to be present with them so that you can see and feel what's going on, because this is a new moment. This is a new moment of this person being here. Even though you may have been married to this person for 50 years, or it's like, this is a new moment of this person being here. So in our daily life, as we remember the vow of bringing benefits to sentient beings, then we can notice this habit of taking people for granted and not paying attention, and so that we can release it and be here and present with them. It doesn't take much. And this way we allow our loved one to feel seen and heard and loved. Related to this, some people may be thinking, oh, okay, this is what I'm here to do, you know, like to bring benefit to sentient beings. And a lot of you may have been already doing that by trying to be helpful, like wanting to be someone who is helpful to others. And you're just like, yeah, mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to invite you to use these moments to look into your mind to see if it is a habit. It is a habit that may inadvertently lead us to cause harm to others. You're like, really? Wanting to help others can cause harm to others? I had this student. She has this habit of wanting to always be helpful. Wanting to always be helpful. And in fact, for her, I have to be helpful. If I'm not helpful, something's wrong. Like, I always have to be helpful. That's her habit. And one time in a retreat, this habit showed up, and she went over to someone who's engaging in her task and started helping her. Right. And this other retreat participant came to me and was very upset about what happened. And there was like a little bit of a conflict there. And you were like, what happened? Well, you know, because in her urge and compulsion of wanting, having to be helpful all the time, having to do something, even though when it is something that is not needed, someone has been assigned to do this, and her urge, her compulsion of having to be helpful all the time, trying to help, barging in another person assigned to do a task, made this person feel that you are saying she is doing a terrible job. Let me help you. And that's why she got quite upset. She meant well, but what happened was inadvertently, by succumbing to this urge of having to be helpful all the time, which is a form of self-centered attachment, we inadvertently cause harm. And actually, afterwards, she talked to me, this retreatant told me, yes, that is actually, it's like a form of suffering for her. She always feels that she has to do this. And it has to do with her sense of inadequacy and lower self-esteem. And so when we cultivate moment-to-moment clear awareness, then it allows us to notice that, oh, what's happening is not fulfilling the vow of benefiting sentient beings. Actually, what I'm doing is perpetuating this habit, this habitual reactivity, telling ourselves that I have to be helpful, be a certain way all the time, whether that is appropriate or needed or not. So when we are able to notice this urge, I have to be helpful, and release it, that actually allows us to open our awareness, to see clearly, to see the present moment situation clearly, and actually be able to notice what is actually needed. And when you notice no one is doing it, maybe if I can be the one doing this. Quite different from barging in, doing something that someone else is already doing and making that person feel inadequate, feel that you are telling them that they are doing a terrible job. And in fact, this is something that I learned from my root teacher, Master Shen Yan. He often would teach us that when something needs to be done, but no one is doing it, let me do it. Give that to me. Give that task to me. So what he's pointing to is that oftentimes there are certain aspects, for example, maybe running a monastery or a certain aspect of a task that is difficult, right? Very challenging. Oftentimes, no one's doing it because it's very difficult, but more often it's because it does not show result very quickly. Most of us want to do something and see that we are succeeding quickly. It's like, you may just do it, like you don't really see results. And you may not even see a result before you die. So people don't want to do it. Or it's not something that is popular or not glamorous. It's not going to earn you a recognition or fame or status, but it's needed. Very much so. And that is what he's pointing to. When there's something that needs to be done and no one's doing it, let me do it. And also the things that others are already doing, it's already covered. Then there's not a need for me to also jump on it to add to that. Let me do something, do what is needed, but not currently being done. So here, I want to clarify, it's not about wanting to stand out as someone who's different, just for the sake of being different. Well, what I'm talking about is that we cultivate clear awareness of the whole situation, total clear awareness, and so that we can recognize what is needed but is not being done. And also the willingness to let go of our desire or attachment to recognition and praise, the status that come from what we do, and do what is needed, even though it is difficult and does not show results and earn us recognition. And in our dealing with loved ones in our life, sometimes we may find ourselves falling into a mode of operation, because that's what we've been doing all our life, without knowing, even though we are engaging in it with good intention. So for example, recently, I met a practitioner, very sincere practitioner, and actually very generous, loving. And she told me how her mother had a very hard life raising several children on her own. And now, you know, she is able to make a good living, and she wants to be able to show her love to her mother by showing her a good time, taking her traveling with her to enjoy life at this time. And then she said, but I dread doing that, because in the previous time she took her mother traveling, first her mother insisted on taking her cousin with her. And the whole time her mother was only hanging out with her cousin. And apparently her mother was overheard by the taxi driver bad-mouthing her with her cousin. And she's like, I don't know if I can't do this anymore. And here is a situation. She wants to show her love. She wants to give her mother a good experience traveling. Yet, she end up feeling rejected, very bitter, and very upset, to the extent that I'm just kind of taking time off from talking to my mother. What to do, right? How to use the practice with that? Here, when we engage in the practice of cultivating clear awareness of what's going on, we may notice, and this is what this practitioner did, and notice that, what's happening? It was that she's been attached to her idea of how her action of showing love should look like. I love my mother. I want to go travel with her, show her a good time by traveling, taking her travel with me, and imagine that we're going to go and have fun and enjoy each other. She had in her mind some other mother. Not her mother. Some other mother who loves traveling with her daughter. So, meanwhile, she wasn't able to see what her mother actually enjoys, actually wants. At her age, her mother wants to be able to spend time with someone her age, her own cousin, so that they get to do things, they have the same pace, you know, traveling. Recognizing that we have been attached to our assumption, our idea. Believing that, her mom should want to spend her dream vacation with her. Recognizing that, actually, that's not what she wants. In the first moment, it can be a little painful. It's like it shatters your idea. Maybe wanting to continue to be the center of your mother's universe. Happened to a lot of adult children. Not anymore. You're not five anymore. They want to have their own life now that you're grown up. And when cultivating clarity about this, allow her to see that, what do I want? I want to show my love. I want her to be able to have an enjoyable trip. How about I pay for her and her cousin to go to London? And I don't need to be there feeling rejected and criticized. And also save money for my own share to go to London, because it wasn't enjoyable for her last time. So, in our good intention of bringing benefits to our loved one, we can practice noticing these ideas we hold in our mind about our loved ones, and instead really see who is here, so that we can work with the person as they are now, not the person we wish them to be. recognize, we hold our idea of people in our mind and ignoring the person who is actually here. Now, some practitioners make this vow to deliver innumerable sentient beings, and these innumerable sentient beings, yes, I vow to bring benefit to all sentient beings except me. I have been excluded from the sentient beings. Somehow, not me. So, we're willing to look after others generously with kindness, but ourselves. So, oftentimes, that shows up as ways where we perpetuate habits of harshness toward ourselves. Some of you may be able to recognize it in moments when we are feeling really quite exhausted, overwhelmed by all the work we have, and we wouldn't allow ourselves to take a break. Just keep pushing on, you know, like I just sleep less, skip meals, you know, just push on. But we will, when someone is feeling kind, hey, you should go take a break, but not me. I benefit everyone but ourselves. Or related to that, the habits of only focusing on what we did not do well and ignoring, dismissing everything we managed to do actually quite well. It's like everything we're able to do, it's nothing, that's nothing. But this thing, you know, I didn't do well, it's a problem. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Beat ourselves up. I don't know. Well, it doesn't sound familiar to you. It's like some practitioners sit here in meditation and feel drowsy. Beat themselves up. What is wrong with me? Why can't I stop being drowsy? While the whole time they didn't give up, they stay and stay and stay. They never gave up. Session after session, never gave up. So doing that is incredible. Yet we dismiss that, refuse to recognize that. So the practice of cultivating total, open, clear awareness is about recognizing that. Because if we refuse to recognize what we are able to do, in this case, we didn't give up, we stay. Then what happened is we end up feeling despair, like a failure, and that can compel us to engage in other actions, such as like, oh, I feel like such a failure, like it's like I would avoid other people, and then we kind of just become more and more isolated from others and turn our life into a ball of suffering. So this is an example of when we allow the habits of harshness on ourselves to be perpetuated. Then what happens is we become so consumed by suffering that we deprive the world of our presence. We withdraw ourselves feeling like such a failure. We deprive the world of our presence, deprive the world of the opportunity to benefit from your full engagement in life. Every single one of us, when we are fully present, everyone benefits. But when we insist on suffering, we deprive the world from benefiting from us. The world needs every single one of us. So, do everyone a favor. Be kind to yourself. Because when you suffer less, you are more available to others. And you're already making the world a better place by suffering less, by giving rise to vexations less. And some practitioners, when they think about this vow of benefiting sentient beings, one place they go to is like, well, what do I do? You know, like in terms of having a livelihood, right? And for those of you who are here at the monastery, or sometimes you come to practice and think that, oh, yeah, but like, you know, I would love to be a priest, but I can't. Or, some may be called to priesthood or life in a monastery to support and maintain a place of practice, like this monastery, to bring benefits to all sentient beings. But that is not the causes and conditions for everybody. And if that is the case for you, then there's no need to generate suffering about it. We work with the causes and conditions we have in our life. So the key is to identify a livelihood that do not involve unethical behavior. So, and also that will make good use of your experience, your talent, your skill, that can bring benefits to others. This vow of bringing benefits to sentient beings can help us find that direction. And maintain clear awareness of our causes and conditions, and then we can find that this is the place where I can start. So some people, they engage in what we call helping professions, like the therapists I talk about. I have students who are nurses, social worker, and teachers. But of course, there are all kinds of professions that are also needed. I had a student who's a chief operating officer of his company. And so we have a tendency to think, oh, corporate. It's like, well, we definitely can use more practitioners in the corporate world. He talked about how like he uses the practice, you know, to work with the board and to ensure that his staff will get properly compensated and not be exploited, and using and developing his skill to manage that relationship. And so then in that way, bringing benefits to sentient beings, or like if your talent is in creating and running a business, can be, we definitely need business that provide useful services and products, right? And we can, if you're good at making money, if that's part of your talent, you can make good use of your money to support places like the monastery, right? Somebody needs to make money. So if that's what you're good at doing, well, go do it. And then with the intention that you will make use of what you're able to make to benefit sentient beings. So here again, when we say vow to deliver innumerable sentient beings, all sentient beings, meaning whether we are sharing space with them this moment or not. So when we are sharing space with sentient beings or in interaction, at work, at home, or in other spaces, and when we remember our vow of benefiting sentient beings, then it reminds us besides staying present, like to use our speech, our bodily action, to bring benefit to them. She can show as being respectful, being courteous, making people feel cared for, loved, and showing kindness, being gentle, supportive, encouraging. And this is even when we disagree with them. That is the difficult one, right? Oftentimes, when we find ourselves interacting with people with very different views that we disagree with, for example, we disagree, or we have different opinions or ideas on how best to achieve something, or on different ideas on what's the most important priority. We notice in those moments the urge to demonize them or to dismiss them. They're just stupid. Or to begin to think that they are these really bad people. Notice this urge to demonize and dismiss people with different views from ours. And this is the time we can practice recognizing, noticing the habits. This is a very, very, very entrenched habit. So the habits of identifying with our views as the only right one and think that others' views are whatever word you use to judge them. You think, if you're sitting here, it's like, yes, of course my view is the only right one. That's the point I'm making. That's a very entrenched habit. Recognize the habits of feeling that way. This urge to believe it, that compel us to dismiss, demonize the other person who has different views. And this is a moment for us to practice remembering that every moment is the coming together of causes and conditions. We may think that our views is superior because, I guess because I'm a superior person. When in reality, the views we have are the coming together of all the moments of our experience, people we talked to, people who taught us, things we read, things we heard. Everything, all our experiences, everything we have encountered, our background, all the information we've been exposed to, encounter, come together as these views. And it is the same for this other person. They have different background, different experiences. They've been exposed to different information, so they have those views. Which means, if you had exact same causes and conditions as that person, you will have those views. If you sit here and think, nah, I don't think so, then you are forgetting emptiness. Our views are coming together, causes and conditions. Difficult to remember this one, though. We can practice and practice remembering this. So when we remember to practice, to release the habits of aversion when encountering people with different views and opinions, then that allows us, because our aversion is no longer getting in the way, we can actually be here, open our awareness, and allows us to truly listen Instead of like, that's so stupid, we can't even hear. Like, you can actually listen to what they are saying and be able to appreciate where they are coming from. Oh, I can see, yeah, with your experience, I can see, you know, why you will feel that way. I can understand, I can see that. And oftentimes, when people feel hurt and seen, all their armor kind of softens. It's like they're ready to fight. It's like, oh, actually, you're not there to attack them. Like, they become less defensive and possibly a little bit more open to what we might have to share. And maybe you won't be able to convert them to your view, but maybe there's a way, there's a possibility, an opening to find some common ground, because after all, we all want to find ways to do something well for everybody. So this process make it a little bit more possible for us to find a way forward to benefit all. If we end up still not being able to find common ground, at least we're able to agree to disagree, instead of ending in perpetuating more hatred. One time, a retreatant asked me this question: what is the point of the practice here? I hope you have been asking this question. How is it going to make the world a better place? So, I thought of this, and I thought of a bowl of jelly beans. So stay with me. Like, think about the world, the entire world, as a bowl, a giant bowl of jelly beans. So there are red jelly beans and blue jelly beans. So every time we give rise to hatred in our heart, we throw a red jelly bean in the world. Every time we do not give rise to hatred and remember to be kind, and listen, we throw a blue jelly bean in the bowl. Well, maybe we are living in a world with a lot of red jelly beans. And it's up to all of us to turn this bowl of jelly beans every moment into a more red jelly bean, more filled with hatred, or less, fewer red jelly beans. Every moment, we choose to react with hatred, perpetuate hatred aversion in our mind. That moment, another red jelly bean. So you can ask yourself, which color jelly beans have I been throwing into the bowl? So every single one of us, every moment, we have an opportunity to make the world a better place. Which do we choose? Every moment is a brand new moment to put a different color jelly bean in the world, in every interaction we have. So when we are fully engaged with each moment, that gives us an opportunity to see what's going on. That allows us to notice, all the things that are working well, and keep that in mind. Yeah, okay, this is good. And also maybe notice things that can use some adjustments. That will allow us to grow. So it's not about, oh, it's all good, you know, it's like you just keep doing the same. No, like you notice things, and then you can, you know, adjust and keep growing. And when appropriate, or when we are asked, sometimes we ask, is there anything that, you know, feedback you have? If you haven't been paying attention, everything's fine, you know, because you didn't notice anything. But if you have been paying attention, then when we are asked, we are more able to perhaps share some constructive feedback. That is a way to benefit other sentient beings, because they want to be able to grow, and we are there to support them by providing some constructive feedback. And so this is when I remember Master Shen Yan's quote that I actually use for my the signature of my email. I'll share this with you here. And this is what I use in my daily life. Wherever we go, whether or not you benefit from being there, let that place benefit from your being there. Let that place benefit from your being there. Usually in our self-centered way, we think about, what am I going to get from this? What am I going to get from this? It's like, drop that habit. Let that place benefit from our being there. And I've been talking about interacting with other sentient beings we encounter. Of course, sometimes, like, you know, there are four sentient beings that are not in our presence. We can also think about how our action might affect them. Here in the last few days in the retreat practice, and actually you can do that at home, right? When we remember to stay in the practice, for example, we will be more likely to remember to open and close the door quietly and not let it slam and kind of startle everyone. And because that can affect other people, kind of gets people all shaken up. Little things. But that is, at that moment, you can remember to practice and benefit others. Or not leave a mess for others to clean up. I have this practitioner who talked about how her husband would come home and leave a sock at the bottom of the stairs and then another sock at the top of the stairs. That drives her nuts. And you may think, socks, you know, what's a big deal? Or it's like, well, when we leave a mess for others to clean up, not only are we making them do the cleaning up, but he makes them feel unloved. That's why it's upsetting. And I remember many years ago when I was traveling with Master Shen Yan as his translator. When we are done at the conference, we need to check out of the hotel. He told us, you need to clean up your room in the hotel. And at that time, I was like, well, we pay for the hotel. Why would we clean? Because they pay people to come clean the room. And then, but I remember this every time I would do it. And then one time I finally realized, oh, it's like, if I leave a mess, not only does the person who come and clean the room, it's a lot of work, a lot more work, but it makes them feel unloved. You just like, treat them as like not a human being. Just leave this like for them to just clean up after us. So it's a way for us to show that we care about them, even though we may not get the opportunity to meet them in person. And lastly, I do want to mention this. In our practice, we encounter like right here, people who guide us in our practice, support us on the path, like all the residents, the Roshi and the priests here, who devoted their life to supporting others in their practice. One important way to bring benefits to sentient beings is to show appreciation, show loving care. The people who teach and guide us in the practice. The reason why I want to make this point is oftentimes practitioners make the assumption that, well, they're very advanced, you know, they don't really need people to, like, you know, show care about them, and they can just take anything, you know. Well, they're human beings. Right? Can use encouragements and loving care. The reason why I talk about it is many years ago, I heard of a story of a very good teacher in a community. And he decided to stop teaching because he got fed up. Got fed up because I know a little bit about that community. It's not that strong point, appreciating the teacher, showing appreciation the teacher. It's like they prefer complaining. So they probably think that, oh yeah, you know, you're very advanced, and you don't need appreciation. Well, but that's what it ended up. It was a shame because he's a very good teacher, and he got fed up by how was taken for granted and treated by a bunch of sangha that prefer complaining and making demands. Not showing appreciation. So when we remember to show appreciation, finding ways to take care of Sangha members, our guides and teachers, what we are doing is to support and keep them feeling encouraged, so that, and to nourish them, so that they can continue to do the work of guiding and supporting other sentient beings on the path. And sometimes we think, oh, teachers are just like they are, like these independently existing entities. No, we co-create the teacher, a loving, supportive, appreciative Sangha. Co-create a loving, supportive teacher. So I want to leave you with that. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.